Well, politics in South Africa is never boring. Mark Burke, recently introduced as a member of parliament, he's the DA spokesman on finance. He has a PhD from Cambridge University, so he knows what he's talking about. We will get the latest from Mark on what's going on with the budget impasse. Mark, I'm really grateful. I haven't thanked you properly, but for coming to the BizNews conference, coming and telling our guys the day after the budget that never was, exactly why. Remember, there were two budgets that never were. But the second one on the 13th of March, you were at the event that day. You explained exactly what was going on. There was great appreciation from the BizNews tribe about that. But we've now moved on to the next level. So 2 weeks and, well, nearly 3 weeks later, what has happened in the budget impasse? We hear that there is some agreement.
Well, Alec, just to quickly touch on the wonderful conference you hosted, the seventh one. It was a lot of fun to be there, and what a privilege. Thank you for having me. On the budget and where it stands, we discussed some of this on the panel there, but maybe just a quick recap, as we had a February attempt at a budget, which at the last minute was communicated to Cabinet, and Cabinet voiced its disapproval officially of the 2% VAT increase. Then there was another budget attempt. The minister made a speech in Parliament, knowing that the DA wasn't in a position to also support that budget, which had stepped down from a 2% VAT increase to a 1% VAT increase split over 2 years, with 0.5% this year and 0.5% next year. But also a number of other issues not yet resolved in that budget. If I were to try and summarize the points of contention for South Africans, and perhaps especially for the BizNews tribe to understand, it could look like we're only talking about VAT. But VAT is really just a symptom of a larger system that's broken. It's a system that I would describe as being sick. And the symptom you're manifesting is ever-increasing taxations to sustain on life support that system. I mentioned this before, but just again for context, the budget that's now being proposed is three times the size of the inflation-adjusted Nelson Mandela budget from 1995. And I don't think South Africans have the impression that this government is doing more for them than that government tried to do for them. So we've got a broken system where the revenue is not the problem. It's the fact that the expenses are inefficient. And alongside that inefficient government spending, we've got an economy that just won't take off, even though we've got great people and we've got resources that other countries can only dream of. And so the budget should be an enabling mechanism. Perhaps the most powerful mechanism any government has at its disposal is the revenue that it will spend on trying to get the economy going and people into work. And so there are almost two things then going on here. You've got an expenditure problem, and that government's really inefficient. And even if it was efficient, it should be spent on the right things to enable economic growth. And we're trying to solve both of those things in this budget process. We're trying to say we need to start putting some serious reins on board on being a more efficient government. And that's simply not going to happen by doing it the way the ANC has always done it. In fact, that is guaranteed to fail. But then the second thing we need to get right with this budget is to say that the budget is a comment on the economy. The budget tells you, the budget is a function of the economy, you might even say, because a proportion of GDP will be taxation, and that will be government's revenue in the future. And so if the economy stagnates or regresses, then revenue for government will not grow, and we'll have a crisis every year we get to this. And so on the second thing, what we've said is, let's start devolving the rail and the ports. Cape Town and Richards Bay should be the first one. And so that was the top of our list in our negotiation attempt, is to say, let's get these ports devolved and potentially privatized. Let's get rail running so that our mines and farmers can get produce and product to the rest of the world. Let's get the electricity network opened up. But there are also other things that we've been talking about. So we've mentioned to the ANC that expropriation is a deterrent for both foreign and domestic capital. It's not viable to say you're going to build a business when government is able to arbitrarily define property and then confiscate it. That's madness. And so all of these things we're trying to solve as part of the budget. And there's been some criticism that perhaps the budget shouldn't encompass these things, but it's our position and it's the right position to say that the budget is absolutely the right place to be talking about the economy. The budget is a function of the economy. And unless we can solve for the economy, the budget is just arguing over line items.
But you almost found yourself in a situation, or certainly from the outside, where the DA could have been ejected from the Government of National Unity, that the EFF could have been brought in. The ANC, it's well known, or certainly was well reported or widely reported, were looking for alternative partners to the DA. I suppose in everybody's interest, thank goodness, that didn't happen. But it appears as though you guys took it to the wire there.
There's a couple of things to address in that question. The one is, I think in any healthy relationship, it's entirely unproductive to constantly threat betrayal. You know, you can't threaten the whole time that if you don't get your way, then you know, you're going to walk out the door and there's all these people waiting for you. The reality is the ANC doesn't want to govern with the EFF. and the price for governing with the NK party would be incomprehensible to them. So I don't want to invite the ANC to go do a deal with the EFF. I think it will be bad for South Africa. There's an open question as to how bad it will be for South Africa, but that what we're not doing is trying to invite them to go for that. But we are saying to them quite firmly, stop threatening it. You know, we know that that is entirely unpalatable to you. We know that it's unpalatable to you because you did a deal with us. And so you've already given us the data point of what you prefer. Now stick to that arrangement if you intend to do so. And if you don't, then really stop talking about it. But I think what we've inadvertently done here is we've allowed the ANC to get away with a lie, which is that maybe they'll do the deal with the EFF. They know the cost of that. They know that they, you know, the public perception of their support at the moment is at 32% with Ramaphosa and below 30% without him. So the president is an asset to that party in their mind. And some of these parties would not want the president in the equation if they were to join. So the self-destruct button has always been at the ANC's disposal, but that is what it is. And they must stop threatening us with that self-destruct button and instead focus on productive partnership. And I will say again that the proposals that we've made are politically neutral. These aren't, you know, radical free market ideas. These are things to do with getting the South African economy firing again, liberalizing areas of the economy where government has historically held it back. And I say historically in the broad sense of the word. We're not proposing radical things. I promise you the people that they're threatening us with are proposing radical things. And I don't think the ANC is a radical party. So I'm just not that concerned by this constant threat. I hope that they don't execute on it. I would encourage them not to do it. But I don't think any partnership can survive an unhealthy level of communication that keeps reverting to the worst possible outcome. I don't think it's good for anybody, and I think they must stop doing it.
But like a divorce in a marriage, I guess, don't threaten because it does not lay proper foundations. But what exactly is going to happen now? You guys have been negotiating for tell us how long, and did it really go until 3 a.m. and have you found any common ground?
Yeah, so the negotiations are ongoing and it's at a couple of levels. So I'll mention again that we've got a deputy minister who sits alongside an ANC minister, so a deputy minister from the DA, Asha Sirupan, and an ANC minister in finance. So they sit in Treasury and, you know, they work out both technical details but also ideas on where the budget could go. In this cabinet, which is a forum, just confidential, but creates a space for people to exchange ideas. And then there's the bilateral negotiation between the ANC and the DA specifically, which is often led by, you know, a negotiating team from the DA, and when needed, our leaders intervene and try and find common ground. Those conversations, even as we speak, are ongoing. And we are in a place where it's uncertain, but my personal position remains that I'm optimistic. And the party's position is that constructive conversations are being held. The most attractive prospect for South Africa is us finding a solution to impasses and finding creative solutions. But also the most attractive solution for South Africa is us is us actually focusing on what will grow the economy in the long term. So the DA wouldn't be able to be party to a transaction where those mechanisms aren't in place. And that will come across at times as quite firm, you know. So it's ongoing, but we won't step back from what we believe to be very reasonable, politically neutral proposals.
But what has been agreed, if anything, so far?
Well, I couldn't speak exactly to the nature of the concessions made and the agreements in place. The fact of the matter is those are ongoing, and when there's an outcome there, the federal leader of the DA would be the best positioned to comment on those. But what I can tell you is the things that we've said from the start has not changed. So I'll just quickly run through, if you're amenable to it, a set of ideas that we've proposed. The first is no new tax increases, be that VAT, personal income, or corporate tax. And of course, the ANC seems willing to die on the hill of some form of VAT increase. And already we've shifted the conversation from 2% to 1%, but that's simply not enough. You know, South Africans are already overburdened with tax. So first, no taxes. Two is we need to do an emergency spending review where we cut things that aren't needed right away. So advertising budgets, catering budgets, things that are just superfluous and not adding anything. The third is we need to do a longer term spending review. And I think this is crucial to point out to South Africans. So we talk in the business community about zero-based budgeting. And it's this idea that you focus on the goals that you want for the year, not on last year's budget. And the spending review will be a mechanism to implement that. We hope that we can unlock within a year 80 to 100 billion rand, which would be multiples of any VAT increase that has been proposed. We do need a bit of time for that. Okay, third thing is the spending review. The fourth thing is we need to get the economy opened up. And, you know, I've mentioned some of these reforms that are needed on rail and port and electricity and so on. And then the fifth thing is we can't cut back on any critical services, so doctors, nurses, teachers, and policemen. These things are, we don't want an austerity budget. We want the economy to keep going and services to keep being delivered. And that also includes social spending. We do think there's value in thinking differently about our social spending and converting what's now the SRD grant into a job seekers grant. But the DA is not proposing that those things be cut. So the things that I've mentioned now have not changed since inception to now. That is part of the conversation. The challenge that we're sitting with is devolving and then privatizing, for example, the Cape Town port means taking away a perceived lever of power from the ANC and its cadres. So what you end up with is Transnet is super inefficient. Our estimation is it's losing between half a billion to a billion rand every month. And that's just the cost to the fiscus. It's not the economic cost of the way Transnet's run. But for Transnet to devolve, you know, the port of Cape Town to the province or the city and then to privatize it means that the cadres aren't able to run that thing anymore and the contracts aren't able to be awarded in there anymore. And so what you're really asking for here is a diminished status of the cadre deployment and what South Africans call the patronage network, what I call a sophisticated embezzlement scheme. So once you start chipping back at that, it does undermine power bases. I'm not always sure how orchestrated these things are, but they definitely exist. And so asking that we start chipping back is problematic on a number of fronts for those that benefit from it. And so that's the impasse that people are seeing here. And it's manifesting, and let's ask South Africans for more tax so we can keep funding this inefficient machine. And the DA is saying no more.
It's quite interesting. Often it's referred to as 99% incompetence and only 1% conspiracy. Let's hope that is the case here, and that if the light is being shined on these issues, that it will be realized that there's a better way. And I suppose what's happening in the United States right now with the whole DOGE episode, talking earlier this morning to Rob Herseff, I suggested to him that if they are finding billions and billions in the United States where they have appointed people ostensibly on merit, in South Africa where you have cadres who've been deployed there with zero merit being involved, if we were to have a DOGE, you can just imagine what might be uncovered there. Is that another way of looking at it from the DA's perspective, that you are looking at perhaps not as aggressively or radical as Musk and co are doing, but at least to focus on that area?
absolutely. And I think there's a bit of emotional weight around Elon Musk, the individual, at the moment that makes some people check out of, I think, the innovation that's happening the world over in governance. You know, if you look at Argentina, they almost pioneered this under Milei. They said that there's no money. We can't afford to keep spending money on things that make no sense and undermine the economy. So you've got, again, two things happening. The one is the cost to your national fiscus of really stupid government departments and government entities. And that should get cut because you're going to have to fund it with tax money. But the second, more pernicious thing almost, is the fact that these inefficient entities get in the way of business. They get in the way of the economy growing. So when you start cutting the inefficient spending, you also start letting loose the economy to do what it does best, which is innovate and find ways to produce that's competitive the world over. And so if you can innovate in the way that you govern, which would be probably cutting back excessive and unnecessary regulation, cutting back unnecessary government departments that imposes that regulation, what you also do by implication is you let the economy loose. And so that combination is super exciting. And you don't have to believe that, you know, Elon Musk is an exceptional human being to believe that that's a good idea. Now, I happen to think that Elon Musk, whatever you think of his political ambitions, is a remarkable engineer in the way that he thinks about things. And so I think we could probably learn a lot about how we, in a structured way, solve problems. We start with the end in mind. We work back by adding in the constraints. And once we've done that, we are able to, in a systematic way, solve our problems. And so this is something that the DA is a proponent of. I mentioned earlier our Deputy Minister of Finance, Asher Sarup, and he's an exceptionally smart person. He's got 3 master's degrees. If we go in this direction, which we hope we will, Asher would be a great individual to help us think about how to cut back on inefficient areas and how to let the economy move. I would say that there are positive signs, although typical ANC style, far too slow. So Operation Vulindlela is meant to do this to an extent. It's meant to start letting the economy go, but we need to accelerate those reforms and we need to start executing to the point of completion.
One of the big things about DOGE in America is its transparency, and this is emphasized every time that Elon Musk gets an opportunity to talk. Is there anything you can do on the South African side to open up this transparency? Is that part of your strategy?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think radical transparency, sunlight is a great disinfectant. So as part of the process, and there's also this other concept which Jim Collins talks about in Good to Great, which is the flywheel. As soon as something starts moving and people see progress, they start getting excited about it. So there's both the transparency, which will be a disinfectant, and at the same time, the excitement of progress. So if you communicate your wins, people get behind you.
Mark, what about, and it's been an interesting journey in our conversations over the past few months. We started off with you saying that you are not going to support a proposed bailout of Transnet. Now, where has your thinking progressed on that side? Because we're still getting this view that Transnet should be bailed out. If not this budget, then next one.
Absolutely. It will have to be the last question I'm able to answer in today's conversation as we're about to go into a press conference for the nation. The challenge with Transnet has not subsided. The only solution to Transnet is breaking it up and making it a lot more efficient. For us to pump money into this behemoth entity is the equivalent of buying one last drink for an alcoholic. We simply cannot do it. It will not allow us. And again, the cost to Transnet continuing to run the way it is both the fiscal cost, which is probably around R1 billion a month, on top of the guarantees that's been given to Treasury already. The actual cost is the economic cost of Transnet not running as it should. So I remain firmly of the view, and it's our party's position too, that we need to devolve the areas of Transnet that make sense to devolve so that they can be run more efficiently, so that the economy can be let loose.
Before you go, when are we going to have a finalization of what's happening?
Well, we are ever optimistic. We'll see what the course of today brings, but the series of bills that now need to be passed will have to be passed over the next 2 months. So there's the fiscal framework potentially this week, and then 3 bills, which is the Division of Revenue Appropriations and eventually Tax Laws Amendment. And that would have run for 2 or 3 months in any way, even if there hadn't been a delay. So hopefully over the next 2 to 3 months, we see a coming together of the parties and the solution found.
Mark Burke is the DA spokesman on finance. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.